Welcome to New Realities. My name is Alan Steinfeld, and each week on this program, I explore the ongoing transformation that's happening in this country, around the world, as we expand into new realities. So that's why I call this show New Realities, because I feel there is a new consciousness coming, and tonight's guest is very much a part of that new consciousness. She is the editor of a book called Transforming Through 2012, and 2012 is the date everybody seems to be focused on as a point of major change. Hi, Deborah. Thanks for being here.
Hi. Thank you.
This is Deborah Gusti, who's also the creator of the Harmony Festival in California. So we'll talk a little bit about that later, but let's talk about this book that you've edited. And first thing I want to say about it, there seems to be a culture of 2012. Whether anything or not happens, the kind of cultural, societal kind of program that's growing up around that date seems to have its own impact. Do you know what I mean?
I certainly do, because it's permeating not only the counterculture, the progressive culture, the spiritual culture, but it's permeated into the mainstream. So it's gotten on the minds of lots of people as a symbol for this change and transition that everyone feels on some level, no matter who you are, this quickening, this change, this rapid transformation that's happening.
And I mean, some of the people you have written essays in this book, like Jean Houston, Bruce Lipton, Nassim Harmin, Barbara Marx Hubbard, these are all people who are already, in a way, bringing in a new consciousness. They are living, they are the architects of this new dawn. Wouldn't you say that?
Definitely. This is something that's been brewing for a long, long time, and the 2012 seems to be an apex for it, but these teachers and leaders and researchers that I have in my book have been on the case of this transformation and feeling this for a long time now. And they all come from different perspectives, but they all see this same shift happening, which is really amazing of what this book points out.
Right. And then personally, how do you feel? What do you think will happen December 21st, 2012? Will it be a bang, or is it already happening as we move towards that date?
Yeah, as a lot of the authors in the book say, the 2012 transition is already happening. We feel it in the shift in our whole culture, in the quickening of our lifestyle, in the new information that comes in, and the new technologies that come in, and the speeding up of everything moving towards another paradigm. So it's definitely happening. I don't think anyone in the book thinks all of a sudden 2012, bang, there's going to be a big shift, because that's not how cycles and changes happen. There's this gradual quickening and then a transition point that happens, and 2012 seems to be that point of transition.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's going to be a big bang, but it's every day we see changes and we see the old that is not sustainable crumbling, and we see the new coming up for new ways of living in the world and being the world coming up and surfacing. So that's what's happening more than one specific point.
Well, I appreciate that, and it's obvious that something is shifting, but for me, what I think 2012 does, it reorientates us from being a solar sort of system, having our attention on that, to directing it towards a bigger focus, that we are part of a galaxy, the alignment, or the so-called alignment of the Earth, the Sun, and the center of the Milky Way, puts us in touch with something bigger than we previously acknowledged. And I think that's what's so important, that we widen our perspective in this new paradigm.
That's what some of the authors are saying. It's almost like another graduation that humanity is happening because of the location it's moving into in the solar system and the awareness of the whole paradigm of the galactic beings on that level. It's like humanity is stepping up to a new level of awareness, similar to when, you know, we discovered America and all of a sudden the world was round instead of this flat thing. And as you can see, there's hints in our culture coming of other realities beyond our world reality as life forms in other universes is kind of coming, just being hinted into our culture. So we're kind of getting ready to to expand our awareness to become a part of the galactic community instead of just the world community. So I agree with you.
Well, a big part of that becoming a part of the galactic community is, like Christopher Columbus, not just showing that the world was round, is that, hey, there's other beings out there. So I think, my personal opinion is, interfacing with extraterrestrial consciousnesses is a big part of what the idea of 2012 will bring. How do you feel about that?
I definitely think that's one part of it, and there's many, many parts of it, just like the hologram. There's the eternal spiritual alignment and ascension and evolution personally on the microcosm level, and then there's the macrocosm of graduating into the galactic community. And there's the level of just existing on the planet in a healthier way that's more sustainable and more in alignment with a healthier way. So there's all those different levels that this 2012 points to. It encompasses it all.
Right. And big part is what you bring out is we have to change the way we're thinking about reality. And you know, that's why I do this program. And it's like changing our perspective of our relationship to ourselves and the Earth and creating a sustainable planet are practical ways that transformation has to happen. What else do you feel needs to happen to change how we think?
Well, it's very much a personal process. I think everyone's lives these days are getting their own inner lessons. It's kind of a radical time to be on the planet. And from what I experienced just in my life and other friends around me life, there's, you know, intense times, many lessons, and you really have to surrender and connect spiritually and kind of have a clean machine of your way of being and in all the ways that we're learning to operate on a deeper spiritual level to really survive in a healthy way, because it's just, it's not easy out there. The whole economy sort of rocking and rolling, so that we can't be dependent on that as our security blanket, but we need to go inside and learn how to manifest and be happy with what is and exist without this money surrounding us, which is what we've done in this culture. So we have a lot of lessons that come up that move us towards a higher spiritual alignment personally. And, of course, on the large level, our society is having these kind of lessons happen on a bigger scale in many ways, as things that are, you know, unsustainable, not appropriate, not in harmony kind of come up to the surface and be shown for the whole world to see over the Internet. Mm. So it's pretty amazing times.
It really is amazing times. It's a time where the planet collectively is coming into a oneness, just because of something like the Internet, but also I think there's an acceleration in the vibration of the physical body. The Earth itself is shifting, and that is opening up a more of a spiritual understanding, or more of an understanding that we are greater than just the physical being, that we are consciousness. We're non-local consciousnesses. So, I mean, that, I feel, is a key point in this transformation, and I'm sure some of the people write about that.
Yeah, what's really great about the book is I have authors that come from the scientific, from the research perspective, as futurists, but also intuitives, spiritual healers, and artists. So they all talk about all these changes that are happening from all those different perspectives, but pointing to ultimately a positive shift. Even though it looks like things are crumbling and falling apart and we might be going off the cliff, that's what it looks like when change happens all the time in your life. You lose a job, it looks like the end, but you find out that you have this other opportunity coming that is so much better, and it evolves you to the next step. So that's what these people, the authors in the book, point to from all their different perspectives.
Yeah, right. It's true. I mean, losing a job, losing a relationship, everybody thinks it's the end, and we can see that it's like a new opportunity. That relationship wasn't working out anyway. So,
right.
Like, same thing with the economy. Well, the economy was really keeping a lot of people poor and too few people rich, and it wasn't sharing the the abundance that is really here for everybody. So it does have to kind of collapse on some level so it can be rebuilt.
Right. And that's definitely a part of it.
That's what we're seeing, and that it's exciting. You're right. It really is an exciting time because we are witnessing history in a way that I don't think any other society has before us, any other group of people, you know. And that's that. And I do think it's positive. I'm with you on that. I mean, so many people say it's the end of the world. It's the end times. But no, I think we have a lot to look forward to. And I think even if we look now back 10 years from where we've come, like from now 10 years ago, we can see a huge shift. I mean, just everyone having cell phones, right?
Right. And what the authors point to, it's the end of the world as we know it. Mm-hmm. So it's the end of one age and the beginning of another age. And that's what some of the Mayan philosophers show. It's actually the end of a 26,000-year cycle and a 5,000-year cycle, this 2012 point. So it's a very intense, specific point where a end of one cycle in age ends and then a new cycle begins. So that's really what we're talking about.
Right. It's also the beginning of the Aquarian Age. It's the end of the Kali Yuga. I mean, many, many...
Exactly.
Religions are pointing to this time, which I do think we're coming into a golden age, an age where we have the technology to feed everyone on the planet. We have that. We have, you know, the planet is not overcrowded. I mean, you can fly over this country and see huge expanses for hundreds of miles where there's nobody, you know. I think, yes, it'd be great to have a sustainable planet, but we do with our technology. It's about greed, I think, and changing, and that's a big paradigm we have to change, is the idea about having more so and other people having less. Somehow that has to shift, and I don't know how you think that could happen. What do you think?
Well, people are having their own lessons in their own lives one by one, so that's part of the kind of economic lessons that we're learning in our culture here.
Mm. You know, the other thing that you don't exactly touch on in the book is what Terence McKenna said in his Fractal Wave of Time, you know, that time is a cyclical, and that he said that by 2012, the cycles of time will have repeated themselves. So when we get down to that point, that dawning on December 21st, 2012, all of history will have recapitulated itself, and we go off in a completely new direction. The unknown, the thing we cannot even hypothesize about because it's not known to consciousness at this point. It's an increase of unique novelty that the world has never seen. That was McKenna sort of.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing from these authors as well. Definitely.
So. If people, there's sort of two camps with this. Everyone who's anticipating 2012, and, well, within that is people like good or bad, but there's the other people who have no idea, you know? I mean, they're just doing their job, drinking their beer, watching the football game, and do we have to do anything with those people?
Those people will reach out and seek information if it's within their spiritual path and their spiritual goal to do that. And they'll have their own dynamic lessons within their own life. We're all in it together. And when crisis happens or when change happens, they'll be called to help their neighbor or shift the way they do things. Instead of not talking to their neighbor, all of a sudden we're a community because something's happening and we got to come down. So everyone will have their lessons. Everyone will have their experience. We're all in this together, and everyone will seek out the information that they need for the next steps that they want to take.
The idea of community, I think, is really big. When Marshall McLuhan in the 1960s said that we are a global village, nobody knew what he was talking about. They said, what does that mean? Now, everybody knows what that means. So This idea of a planetary community, I think, is such a major part of this transformation. And there's no way to avoid it. But
definitely, that's what some of the authors point out. One of the biggest thing you can do is really get to know your community. And where I am in Sebastopol, California, we have a thing called Transition Town, which where community members share what they have to offer. So should crisis happen and you start to rely on community, you know who your doctor is, you know who can grow food, you know who can do this resource and that resource. I mean, we actually have 400 people in our community that have all gotten to know each other and know how they can support each other should something come down. It was based on, this model was based on accounting for peak oil. If it came to a time where, you know, we would not have oil, what would we do as a community to grow food and to help each other and heal each other and support each other? So that kind of thing falls into this whole conversation really strongly.
Well, how can we use that as a model for other communities? I mean, what can we do to put that word out there?
Well, it's called Transition Town. This is a specific system. It actually began in England, and towns can adopt and learn how to do this within their town. And Sebastopol was the eighth town in the United States to take on this model, and now towns are taking it on, and you'll find community leaders getting behind it, getting trained, and learning how to organize community so that they know how to pull all the resources together to support each other.
And, you know, I think that's really a more natural way of living in small communities, and I think it's perfect that we can start to de-urbanize because we can stay connected with the Internet, and we can start to live how I think we evolved our way as humanity living, which was in communities, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sharing blenders and toasters. You know, people say in the 50s it was quite a capitalist plot to get everyone buying their own toaster, their own things, and just and when you're in a community, I mean, even collectively, you can share things and change the economy that way. That's another way of doing that.
And, mm-hmm. Yeah, and, definitely. People are seeking that out at this point, definitely.
So that's really exciting. And so this is, I mean, yes, you're right. It takes many years for a transition in culture to take an effect. But how long, I mean, we've been in it probably since the 60s on some level and the 80s and the last 10 years. But when do you think it'll really settle in what's happening?
I think it's happening every day, every month, every year, and it will quicken and anchor in at that time and still continue. Because part of what you talked about also is the new technologies coming out, birthing through, that are going to be able to help us in this new way of being, new healing modalities, new energy modalities, and like you said, things that we have no even concept of what's going to help us. So it's the whole process that's going to continue.
Well, and then now talk a little bit about what you're doing as far as the Harmony Festivals in Northern California. How is that, like, fit into this vision? Because I think you're doing something great there.
Yeah, it's all part of what I've been doing. I founded the Harmony Festival 33 years ago, and the Harmony Festival is a large music, arts, consciousness, ego, health festival that takes place in Santa Rosa, California, at Sonoma County Fairgrounds, which is 1 hour north of San Francisco at the gate of the wine country.
What's the date this year?
What was that?
What's the upcoming date this year?
It's June 10th through 12th.
Okay, great.
And it's a large festival. We get 35,000 people. It goes from Friday through Saturday. People come and camp if you want. Major music acts. We've had Lauryn Hill, Damian Marley, Erykah Badu, Taj Mahal, major music acts, and major speakers. We've had a lot of the people that are in my book, Bruce Lipton, Barbara Marx-Hummard, Maxine Harriman, Jean Houston. And there's lots of education. There's an eco-village. There's a goddess grove. There's a healing sanctuary. There's a wellness pavilion. So everything that sort of birthed forward as concepts in the 60s and then became grounded into reality and mainstream, it's part of this Disneyland of human potential and experience at the Harmony Festival.
Well, I'd love to go, maybe even speak, because I've been studying crop circles for about 10 years, and I think they are signs of a higher consciousness directing us to new paradigms, new ways of thinking. So if you want, we'll talk about it sometime.
I'd love to get the websites for the book and the
Oh, definitely. Put that out there. What is the website for the Harmony Festival?
Yeah, well, what for the book, well, I have a print book and a multimedia ebook. So in alignment with the new paradigm, this is the next technology of ebook technology called a multimedia book. So this book is text, audio, and video. And you read it online on your computer, or after the first year, it'll be available on iPad. And it's just like a book, except for each page, the author has three pages to give their core message about 2012. And it's their writings, but then also you have audio clips and video clips so you can actually see and hear them. So it's a great way to get the information, as well as a print book, if you like the old-fashioned print book style. And you can go to the website, which is transforming through 2012. And there's a button right at the top where you can press that says free chapters, and it'll technology and read four free chapters for free and just see what it's about.
Wow, that is a great idea, the iPad forming the way we read books as multimedia platforms. That is brilliant.
Yeah, it's great. And my book is the first of its kind coming out. But soon, all the different publishers are evolving this kind of technology. So.
Wow, that is great. And what's the website for the Harmony Festival?
Yeah, it is harmonyfestival.com, and you can go on there. You'll see information about previous festivals and all the different attractions and what can happen. And then information will continue to get on in the next few months about what we're going to be presenting for this year, June 10th through 11th in Santa Rosa. That's harmonyfestival.com.
Wow, it's very exciting. I'm really happy that you have this book out. But is there any, like, final word you would like to say about 2012 as a sort of statement of consciousness? I mean,
yeah, it's real important not to go into fear and contraction and all that, because it's easy to do, because as things shift and shake down and things that are with our structures that we sort of depend in have to shift, it's easy to go into fear. But just like any evolutionary process in your life, there is, you know, from what I hear from all the teachers, from all these different perspectives, they're saying it's an evolutionary leap that we're going through in our spiritual evolution and in our planetary evolution. So if we just keep that in mind and go through it like going through the birth canal, we're all going to experience, you know, a new life and new possibilities and greater everything that we can if we keep positive and keep moving through it and keep connected with our community and help one another. And to stay real positive and, you know, take your lessons as they come and move through it.
Mm. And hold on to your seats, because I think we're in for times that people have not seen before, but really exciting times, not something to fear, but something to anticipate with excitement, enthusiasm, and new possibilities. That's what I get about 2012. It's and what we're in right now. It's a time that the planet come into the joy of being human. Maybe it'll be the end of war as we know it. Maybe we'll really live as we're capable of living in our full potential. That's what I see as a possibility for 2012.
Yeah, great.
Well, thank you, Deborah, and I will email you anyway about the Harmony Festival and seeing what I can do there. And I appreciate your book, which is Transforming Through 2012. That was printed by Yinspire Media. That's printed,
yes.
You? And then I've been talking to Deborah Giusti, G-I-U-S-T-I, the editor of this book. And thanks so much for every. Are you coming out with another volume?
You know, I am going to come out with a series, and it'll be about the new global paradigm in all its various topics, pulling together the top leaders and thinkers. We have 33 authors in this book. I'll probably have 33 authors in the upcoming books. I'm going to have one with all women, mostly all women, about the divine feminine.
Great.
And there's so many great people with great information. And it also allows you to access these people, because online you'll see what they have to say, and then it'll have their website, and you can go right into their information and study with them more if they inspire you. So it's a great way to network all this great information that's out there these days.
I think the Divine Feminine is a major part of this new paradigm, the honoring of the feminine.
Definitely.
And it's to have an equality between the male and the female, the masculine and the feminine, and we'll have a balanced society that way. So thanks again. I appreciate you being here as a guest and everything you're doing, and hopefully I'll be out to the festival and see you. At least I want to go at least once to see it, because I've heard such amazing things about it. So
yeah, it's pretty amazing, that's for
I
sure.
Will I'll talk to you. Okay.
Like a warrior, nothing will bore you. You can be happy. Letting the light will heal you, and you can feel you and sing out the song of the soul. And we sing this song. Why don't you sing the Lord? And we can sing for a
That was Chris Williamson in the Song of the Soul. It's a great song. I'm back with one of the authors of Transforming Through 2012, Kimberly Ruff. And she, particularly in that book about 2012, she talks about the coinciding of the Hopi and the Tibetan prophecies. Welcome, Kimberly.
Hi, Ellen. It's nice to talk to you.
Yeah, it's nice to talk to you again. So, you were telling me, so if you don't mind saying what you said before, which is how these two prophecies of the Hopis and the Tibetans line up exactly. Give us a little background about that.
Sure. Would you like me to tell you about that?
Yes. Yes. Sure.
Well, first of all, I'm so glad you got to talk to Deborah, because it was her wonderful idea to make this book about the hopeful shift in 2012. And that was why she sought me out to write a chapter for this book, because the Hopi Tibetan prophecy talks about that the day after December 21st, 2012, December 22nd, 2012, begins the time of never-ending peace. And no one hardly knows this. So to tell you how I got involved with this, in 2001...
Who says it is the beginning of never-ending peace? Which prophecies say that?
The Hopi Tibetan prophecy. I am what they call the messenger of the Hopi Tibetan prophecy, which means I have been asked to share this prophecy with the world. I mean, like literally asked. Like on 080808, Grandfather Martin Goshua Sioma of the Hopi Nation, he's the keeper of the sacred tablets of the Fire Clan, specifically said, I am going to be retiring. As a favor to me, will you tell this, you know, prophecy to the world and tell them now? And I told him, I don't write. I don't have an internet website. Well, long story short, I came across this woman, Valerie from the Ground Crew, and so I've now written 20 writings. Deborah found me to write this story, and there's just so much going on. But I have been studying for the last 10 years since this happened with the Hopi and the Tibetans. And so to explain this, because there's the Hopi prophecy, which I'm not a carrier of. There's a Tibetan prophecy, which I'm not a carrier of. I am the messenger of the prophecy of the link of these two. And in fact, my little son is the human link between these two prophecies. It's just an amazing story. That's why I've been asked to be the messenger, because it's my responsibility to raise this child and his actual
existence. Well, tell us who your child is. I mean, tell us that background, how your child was discovered to be one of the reincarnations of these great lama. I think that's a really interesting story.
Oh, it's so amazing. In 2001, these Tibetan lamas came to the town where I live and asked me to bring my child, that he was a reincarnation of one of the lamas. At the time, I knew nothing about Tibet. I had not seen the movie Little Buddha, which I have since seen, and many of them came from all over the world, like maybe four, five, or six different groups from Mongolia, from India, from all over, saying that this boy was a reincarnation, and they asked me to take him to a specific High Lama, Venerable Baka Tuka Rinpoche, to see if he should be what they call recognized, because not just any Lama can say if someone's a reincarnation. Well, it turns out that since 1959, when China occupied Tibet, the Lamas and Tukus can choose where they are to be born, and they're choosing to be born everywhere except Tibet. So, like in this movie Little Buddha, there are more and more and more Lama Rinpoche Tukus being born all over the world. There's even a book right now called Reborn in the West that's talking about this phenomena. Well, I had heard nothing of this. So in 2001, these Tibetans came and told me this, and Venerable Baka Tuka Rinpoche did recognize my son as this Tuku, and in fact gave him this rock with ancient writing. And then just a month later, this woman came to me representing the Hopi Indians, and she said, "Have you heard of the Hopi prophecy?" And I said, "No." And she said, Did the Tibetans give you a rock with ancient writing?" I said, "Actually, yes." She said, "May I see this rock? Will you?" I showed it to her. She said, "Will you come with me to Hopi to bring this rock to the Hopi Indians?" So I didn't know what was going on. I went, and it was an amazing adventure. It turned out that Grandfather Martin Goshwe Sioma, who we brought the rock to, who is the keeper of the sacred tablets of the Fire Clan of the Hopi Prophecy, I recognized him from my dreams. Well, then I find out that the Hopi Prophecy, which takes 8 to 9 days to tell, begins when the Iron Eagle flies and the horses run on wheels. And then it goes on to say our brother will return from the east, and it explains all this stuff. Turns out the Tibetans have a matching prophecy, word for word, Padme Sambhava, the 8th century, that says when the Iron Eagle flies and the horses run on wheels, the Tibetans will lose their land and go to the land of the red man to teach the Dharma. And that, of course, is what happened in 1959. And this prophecy was activated in 1974 when His Holiness the 16th Karmapa came to Hopi and met the Hopi and made it rain. And then one of the other realizations of this prophecy was apparently the birth of my little boy, that because he is claimed as a reincarnation, and they gave him the rock, he is actually the human link to these two prophecies. I am actually Native American by ethnicity. So he's a little boy who is part Native and a reincarnation. So in the last 10 years, I've spent much time with the Tibetans. My son has been studying here in our town.
And did you think your son was unusual before this? Did you think he was?
Oh, yes.
If you did, in what way?
Well, when he was like a year and a half, he would do these dances, which I've since found out to be called mudras. He would do these Tibetan dances. He would sit out in the yard and chant to the trees, and he would go, "Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum." Well, I didn't know what he was saying, and now, of course, I know what he's saying. When he was 2 and a half, we would walk down the street, and there was a picture of His Holiness the Dalai Lama in the window, and my little boy, who just learned how to talk, said, "There is my friend, the Dalai Lama." Well, of course, I thought, everybody likes the Dalai Lama. I found out later, when a monk named Venerable Tashi contacted me from Mongolia, that my son had actually been with the group in 1959 that crossed over the Himalayas when His Holiness the Dalai Lama escaped. That my son had been an old Lama, His Holiness the Dalai Lama was 16 at the time, and Venerable Tashi was age 2, and his family was carrying him. And the way this works, if you see this movie Little Buddha, they come looking for their masters, their teachers, and then they just sort of take turns life after life. So Venerable Tashi came from Mongolia looking for my son, who is now a little white-looking kid.
Well, did your son recognize the pictures of himself in the past lifetime? I'm sure he's seen them,
yes.
Right?
There aren't even words to describe what this child is like. Every day I am in awe of this little person. He is what they call a bodhisattva. Have you ever heard this word, bodhisattva?
Yeah, I talk a lot about that. These are people who have reached a level of enlightenment who come back to the planet to lift up the rest of humanity. And
that's
so you're
exactly
saying your son
what,
is...
Yes.
You're
yes, he is a recognized bodhisattva. Yes, and he is just pure love. I mean, it's been 10 years, so he's now 14. And I'm telling you, Alan, I've never heard that boy utter an unkind word. He's pure compassion.
Is he a regular kid, though, as well?
Oh, my God. Yes, that is what is very different about my son, Joe, is that the early tulkus that were born in the West were taken to Nepal or India, like in the movie Little Buddha, to raise them the way the tulkus have been raised, and it turned out to not work very well. So my son was like an experiment. He's very much a little kid. In fact, his friends have no idea. We keep all of this very separate. He makes straight A's. He's a captain of the basketball team. He does trapeze. He just won an award for winning the Martin Luther King essay. I mean, he is very much this amazing little regular American kid, and yet people are drawn to him because of his light. They don't understand. And then when we go to, there's a sangha in town where he's studying Tibetan and, the language and whatever, because he has that inner bodhicitta, his bodhisattva nature, but he's still learning the old texts and whatever. He's able to walk between these two worlds quite beautifully. And
what is he remembering? What is he telling you from that lifetime? What does he say about it?
It's so interesting, Alan. He doesn't really, really care about the past. He cares about helping humanity now. I mean, sometimes he'll say something wacky, like when he was very small, explain to me the different stages of the bardo, Mom. And I'll just stare at him, because at the time I didn't know anything about the Tibetan Book of the Dead, but he expected me to know because I was his mother. But what's really amazing is he understands that his assignment this time is to help with what's going on at the Hopi Nation. And we've been there many, many times. We were just there in August, and I was going to talk to you a little bit about this, that Grandfather Martin had asked me, find the city of the tunnels. I didn't know what he was talking about for many years. I found out this summer that there actually is a lost city of the dead under the Grand Canyon, and that it was found 100 years ago by a man named G.E. Kincaid, who had been commissioned by the Smithsonian, and then it was sort of hidden away, Area 51. And what was in this cave that no one knew was they found a Buddha, a statue of a Buddha.
How old is that statue?
Well, thousands of years old. And so this is what is so interesting.
It can't be thousands of years old. Buddhism is only about 2,500 years old. And I don't think it actually became a religion until about 2,000 years ago or something like that.
Right.
So it goes back to that time. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. We're going to try to get our caller back on the line. And she is one of the authors of this new book that if you're listening earlier, by editor Deborah Gusti called Transforming Through 2012, which has a bunch of different authors all talking about this transformational process that's happening there. And
Are we back on the air?
Yes, sorry. I don't know what happened.
Oh, that's okay.
I'm glad you're back.
What I was explaining was about the statue of the Buddha.
Yes.
The actual date is between 2000 and 8th century, because it turns out that this Buddha statue was of the Buddha Vairocana. They have different Buddhas. And this is what is so amazing about this cave, Alan, is that in the Hopi Tibetan prophecy, they talk about the access twins. And in the Hopi creation story, they talk about these twins that hold the poles of the earth. And of this, his Venerable Bhakatuka Rinpoche, which is the Tibetan that recognized my son, is the Tibetan version of this. And Chief Grandfather Martin Gautry Seoma is the Hopi version of this. Well, what is so amazing about this Buddha statue in the Grand Canyon is that Bhakatuka Rinpoche is the reincarnation of Vairocana. And I went to see Bhakatuka Rinpoche.
Wait, I think I lost you. Wait, who's a reincarnation? Wait, I lost you with the names. Can you just back up and just give me that again?
Venerable Bhakatuka Rinpoche, who is the High Lama that recognized my son, you know, as a tulku, he
right.
is the reincarnation of the Buddha, Vairocana. That's why he has a place called the Vairocana Institute. He is the reincarnation of the Buddha
of
that
the
was in the
statue. Of the Buddha of the statue that's in the Grand Canyon, you're saying?
Yes. And so I went to see Bhakatuka Rinpoche over Thanksgiving. He was in town giving this ancient Tibetan chode, and I talked to him about this, and he knew exactly. He said, "I'm so glad you found it." I mean, so these prophecies are all coming together, and they believe that the Hopi believe that this is a time of purification. The Buddhists believe it's what we call the degenerate times, but the Hopi Tibetan prophecy talks about a very, very hopeful. Transition. That the Hopi prophecy, if you know anything about the Hopi prophecy rock, there are the two paths, and the path of the one heart, the path of the two heart, and from what everything I understand, we are very much entering into the fifth world, which is what the Hopi talk about, that these prophecies, you know, the Hopi Tibetan prophecy has been actualized very recently, and there's so much going on. For example, I wanted to mention that there's a big election at Hopi over the next few weeks where the United States government is wanting to take over and take all their rights away and make gambling and et cetera, and that would be just devastating to the Hopi people. But what I have been told...
Wait, I just want to get back to the statue. Can you go to the Grand Canyon and see the statue that's there of the Buddha?
Kind of not really. It takes 5 days. The location is secret. It takes 5 days to hike there. You have to shear a 1,500-foot cliff. And even then, it has been taken over by the government, like Area 51. So my son was asked to go there in August to consecrate this Buddha statue. He was asked to bring this Tibetan artifact, this double dorje. So we, of course, didn't go down the cliff, but we were given a map that was only, you know, given to a few people. And so we went as close as we could go, and cute little thing, you know, he plays baseball too. He pitched the double dorje, and we said a prayer. So as to whether or not the Buddha statue is still there, from whatever thing I've been told, is it doesn't even matter. It doesn't matter if the government put it in a warehouse like in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
But it's a symbol.
But
no, I get it. So it might be there, might not be. The fact that it
right.
was there and there was
yes.
this connection. So what does this all mean, and what's happening with 2012 and the prophecies, and where's this What's the specifics of where this is all pointing us?
Exactly. The best way I can explain it, since I know we just have a half hour, is there were two paths, according to this Hopi prophecy. The one that is the one heart, which leads to the time of never-ending peace, or the path of the two heart, which leads to nuclear war and we all die. What I have been told is for these, for the prophecies to be unveiling the way that they have, means that we have entered into the time of never-ending peace. We are headed that direction. The very fact that this cave has been found and recognized is one of the signs. I was told by these people that contacted me about the cave that the legend says that a woman of mixed blood, part white, part Indian, would come at this time and explain why the Buddha statue is there. And I was told that they believe that woman is me, because I'm...
Okay, so then... And tell, is that what you're telling us? Why, this program must be part of the prophecies then, if you're telling us.
All of these shows. In fact, Grandfather Martin Gautry Sioma asked me to take all of this information on the internet. And I said, I don't know anything about the internet. And he showed me the second prophecy rock, Alan. The first prophecy rock is very, very famous. It's all over the internet. People know. Most people do not know about the second prophecy rock. It's
what
this
does that
odd-looking
show?
Contraption. Pardon me?
No, tell me what the second prophecy rock talks about.
It's a picture of a satellite. A lot of the New Age people from Sedona like to say it's a spaceship. It's not a spaceship. The Hopi, who, you know, it's their prophecy rock, say it's an instrument, that it is an instrument that one day will create this thing where the whole world can talk, the internet. So Grandfather Martin asked me to take this information to the internet so that the whole world would know. And that is, you know, what I started doing, 080808, because, you know, I'm a psychotherapist. I've never written anything in my life. And yet now the story is out there. I'm doing your show. I've done other radio shows. I'll do more. The book.
But I'm still not getting what is the main message. How do we take that good path? I mean, what are we supposed to do?
I can tell you it in one word: compassion. The message of the statue, the message, like the rock that Venerable Bhakatuka Rinpoche gave me, on it said, Om Mani Padme Hum, which is...
In the Grand Canyon, it said that on the original statue. That's incredible.
And here's the thing. Somehow, all 84,000 of the Buddha's teachings are in that six-syllable phrase, Om Mani Padme Hum. I am certainly not the person who could explain this to you. But the Hopi prophecy talks about that their brother from the east will return with, you know, this thing that's missing. And that is what has been missing at Hopi, is the compassion. Like right now, all these different Hopi are fighting about, should we have this election? Should we not have this election? People are calling me saying, do something, Kimberly, other friends. And all of my dreams and prayers and the people that the elders I consult with and the lamas, they say, we pray for the compassion. This is all just a test. So the whole point of the Hopi Tibetan prophecy is compassion, and that is why my little boy is the perfect symbol, because I'm telling you, Alan, he has never spoken an unkind word. He is absolutely pure love, and he's an example of what we can become in the fifth world.
Right. But there must be something more than just, I guess compassion is a huge thing, but I would think that what's the prophecies? I mean, just that when the iron horse and the plane, but there must be more details. It's amazing that they line up, but there's something else that I would think is part of that, isn't there?
You know what, though? There actually isn't. I mean, like I say, the Hopi prophecy takes 8 to 9 days to tell. It's extremely, extremely complicated, but it all gets down to the non-dual approach of this Tibetan Buddhist teachings, that there are no enemies, that we are all one. That's why this whole internet is perfect, because, you know, the whole one world thing, that the answer to getting to the fifth world is when we get to this place where we're, as, you know, crazy as it sounds, we have compassion for each other, and then there won't be a nuclear war because no one will want it. The energy to blow up the planet won't be there anymore. And from all the elders and the lamas I speak with, we are pulling it off. We are absolutely pulling it off. It is not going to all end in nuclear war. Like just last week when North and South Korea were, you know, starting it up, it seems like they're working it out. This has to do with what we are creating on this planet right now. It's an amazing time.
No, I agree. It does seem like there's something that's being transformed. I think it's the upliftment of the consciousness that we are all connected to. And I'm just curious. Yeah, go ahead.
There's something else that's very, very important. The Hopi Tibetan Prophecy talks about it is our job, like you and me and our generation, to keep the planet from blowing up until December 21st, 2012. That is our job, to go the path of the one heart, et cetera. Because the Hopi Tibetan Prophecy talks about these new children that, you know, have begun coming to the world. And that right around that time is when the ones that first started coming in mass will become adults. And so the prophecy says all we have to do is keep the planet from blowing up until December 21st, 2012, and then they're going to take over. There are more and more children like my son. These new breed of kids, they will take care of the planet. We have just got to make sure it's still there for them to take care of, because but there are some amazing kids here.
That's only 2 years away. I mean, is there enough of those
kids to actually
run the planet?
If you really look around, they're here and they are getting ready, and they, I've been watching this now for 10 years since they first started coming. And like I say, I noticed it about my children. I have two boys. My older one is very much like the indigos that they talk about, that have come to like just change the government, change the schools. They're not taking it the way they were. And then the more sensitive, you know, crystals and whatever came. And there's many bodhisattva children coming. So the whole point of this prophecy is, we are to create a world for them to take over. The thing that I find so, so interesting, Alan, is that we only turned this corner very recently. That if you look on the internet, you can see an interview with Grandfather Thomas Banyaka, who actually found the Hopi Prophecy Rock. And as recently as 1998, he said, I don't know how this is going to end. This could all blow up. And that was just 12 years ago. And in the last 10 years, especially the last 3 to 4, we have turned this corner, Alan, and I believe we're going to make it. That's what they are telling me. It's just an amazing thing.
Well, I think we are going to make it, and I'm really happy that, you know, there's Tibetans and holding the lineage. Doesn't this new time mean, though, it's the ending of those old traditions? Like your son is saying, look, it doesn't matter what he was.
Right.
It's great. He has the wisdom, but
we're
going into a new time where we can forget about Tibet and Ism and Hopis and all the religions of the world. And we can start
something. That is so true, Alan, that you have nailed it, because that's why even if they vote to have gambling and the Hopi civilization ends as it is, it doesn't really matter. We have pulled this off. Like Tibet, the fact that they were forced out of their land and China took over ended up being good, because paradoxically it brought the ancient wisdom of these Tibetans to the planet, and they're the ones that brought the answer to the West. So it's very true. His Eminence Dzongsar Khyentse Rinpoche, who is a tulku, he believes the tulku system should be dismantled. There's no more need for it. And I can tell you, my son is not attached to it. He doesn't have an ego around this. He's just this happy little kid who is just enjoying all of it. He thinks every day
I just want to ask you, the fact that the Tibetans and the Hopis both had the same prophecy for this time, does mm-hmm. that mean they were connected
yes.
psychically, or does it mean that the universe had this message, or was there a common civilization back then? Or, I mean, how do you explain, how is it explained by them?
The high yogis of Tibet and the elders and the Hopi and what used to be the Anasazi Nation, they had the capacity to travel back and forth. So they would meet in their councils. And so even though they did not have, boats and airplanes back then, they didn't need them. So yes, they
just... Wait, how did they travel? Did they travel psychically then?
Yes. Yes, if you read about Tibetan yogis, they can do amazing things. If you read about what these Hopi do in their kivas, their system goes back to the Anasazi. They're extremely an advanced race. So yes, they would talk about these things. That's why, as crazy as it sounds, you know, people have asked me, how did the Buddha statue get here? Do you believe that the Tibetans came here physically? No. No, that these high yogis, they had the capacity to transport things. They,
wow.
If you read about these yogis, they can do amazing things.
Well, maybe your son can do that. We're just about out of time. Can just leave us with one, like, really amazing thought about 2012. Could you?
Yes, I believe that as crazy and as wacky as it looks, I believe we are entering this time of compassion. That I have heard that what is happening on Earth is an experiment that the whole universe is watching, Alan, and that it's been tried before, and we are the first ones that have pulled it off. I know that sounds nuts, but that is what I have been told.
No, I don't think it sounds nuts at all. I totally agree with you.
Well,
I think, though, the universe itself, or this, at least this galaxy, is moving into a vibrational shift. And we're one aspect of that.
They're smiling
big
at us
organism.
For pulling it off.
Well, Kimberly, thanks so much. The book is Transforming Through 2012, edited by mm-hmm. Deborah Gusti. You can get that online as well. And, what's your website, and how can people reach you?
Oh, okay. www.kimberlyruff.com, spelled KYMBERLEERUFF. But my writings about the Hopi Tibetan prophecy are on my friend Valerie Donner's website, The Ground Crew, www.thegroundcrew.com. I have 20 writings, the most recent one being about this lost cave, because we just returned there from a couple of months ago. So all this stuff that I've been telling you about is all written there if you happen to want to read it. And in the book, of course.
Wow, it's very exciting. Thank you so much, Kimberly, for being
talking to you.
On this journey with all of us and
yes.
this time of transformation. So keep us up to date about what's happening with your son and everything like that, okay?
I will. He's an amazing boy. Okay, well, you have a wonderful week. And happy holidays to you.
Okay, great. You can always reach me at newrealities@earthlink.net. So I appreciate, your research. Thanks.
I'll be in touch.
Much.
Okay, good night.
Thanks, Kimberly. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. If you want to reach me, email me, like I said, at newrealities@earthlink.net. And check my website, newrealities.com. Here's Neil Young taking us to another world. I love this song.
Found
the chosen ones, all in a dream, all in a dream. The loading had begun. Crying Mother Nature's silver seed to a new home in the sun. Flying Mother Nature's silver seed to a new home.
Thanks for listening. Good night.